Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Relationship Marketing here on, of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Boy, what a day! I am your host, Gina Gaudio Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. Calling in live this week from Mishawaka, Indiana, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. Linda and I are pretty sure we have got a great show lined up for you guys today as soon as we locate our guest who's in the Philippines, so he might be having some issues trying to get in. Last time we had him on the air with us, I had to do something a little weird to get him here. So let's see if I can find him, Linda.
That would be perfect. If you can find him, that would be grand. While you're doing that, you know, Gina, it's been a very interesting week, and I have had very interesting conversations with a number of my colleagues about what's changed in the past few years as a result of technology, which is technology used to be this really fascinating tool reserved for the few, and then it has become such an endemic element of all of our lives that we literally can't quite navigate through our days when it stops working. And this is a perfect example with this show, because this is a nexus. This is the joining point for each of us calling in using different technology from different parts of the world. In a sense, it's different parts of the universe because of all the different pathways that people use in order to connect nowadays. So, for instance, I'm on what is traditionally called a landline. Very odd. Most people that I'm talking with nowadays don't have one any longer. Gina's talking to us from a cell phone. Tim may be contacting us through Skype. And in any one given moment in
usually time, that's what he has to do.
Exactly. And in any one given moment in time, each and all of those may be having their hiccups. And there's not a thing we can do about it. So it's really fascinating to have technology playing such a large role in our lives, and at the same time, we have to become more accepting of the vagaries of what happens with tech and technology. There's no two ways around it.
No question about it. Absolutely. And man, it can be challenging sometimes, huh?
I know the inside story for some of the folks who are with us listening to this is, you know, there are times where I'm sitting in sunny Southern California looking out at squirrels running along my fence line. And, you know, right now they're going over to the fig tree. So I'm watching them trying to figure out how to carry something that's half the size of their head as they're running along a fence line. And I'm thinking, you know, where is everybody? And Gina's at the opposite side of the country with thunder and lightning and rain and wind blowing and a line that won't let her onto the show. So it's really, I would say, to me, part of what's so fascinating about it is the change in design of our lives and design of our businesses because of elements that we, in fact, can have as enabling tools or complete disabling tools.
Absolutely. And it is very interesting how we live life today, isn't it?
It is. You know, Gina, you're in a very different region from I'm sitting here in the middle of urban Los Angeles, where once upon a time you could say to somebody, I'll see you in 10 minutes. And other people would say, well, how many miles is that? And our answer was, it doesn't matter how many miles it is. I know how long it's going to take me to get there. You're in a completely different zone where you can set a different kind of expectation.
And very true.
Well, oops.
I found a phone number for Tim, so I'm going to try and call him in the Philippines and see if I can reach him. I will be right back, Linda.
Perfect. You do that, and I'm going to talk about the joys of technology. For those of you who don't know how a Blog Talk radio show operates, we actually log on online, and I am sitting here looking at the studio. And what that does is it gives us a control panel for seeing who is calling in. And if you call in from a phone number, the phone number comes up. If you call in from a Skype line, sometimes you see a phone number, and sometimes you see all ones, which leaves you guessing about who might be on the other side of that. And so, you know, it's fascinating. I'm sitting here watching as certain phone numbers are coming up and disappearing, which that could have been Tim trying to reach us and literally being bounced off because of the signal and what's happening in his half of the world. And it's really quite fascinating that we're so much more easily able to connect with each other, to join each other in conversation, to bring you engaging material. What does it mean for you and your business when technology is now playing a fundamental role in how we plan our work, how we get on with getting our work done, when it's fundamental to how we do and don't connect smoothly with each other, and the expectations we're able to create and achieve or not achieve? So at the moment, I'm seeing 770 showing up, and I'm going to click on it to find out. I'm just checking to see if Tim Bennett just joined us or not. Tim, if this is you, say yes. It is not. Here's the fascination of technology. Gina's working on one end, looking to see if she can create the connection and three-way him in for our conversation today. And he may at the same time be trying to come in from his side. So I'm going to ask you all to think about, as you're experiencing the fun and the game of what technology enables and how it can interfere at the same time with how you want to show up in being of service to the people that you're working with, in the services, in the products, in the programs that you're creating as you're offering to your clients, to your customers. How is technology playing into your world nowadays? And if you
it's amazing, isn't it?
It really is.
I got his phone number. I tried it three different ways. I called with Google Voice. I called through Blog Talk Radio. And
yeah.
I called through my cell phone. None of the above are getting him.
And it's fascinating because I think about, I don't know, I will say 10, 15 years ago, when we could talk about what it was to set expectations for ourselves of who we wanted to be as professionals in the world. And that was when tech was in its early stages and we could hold ourselves responsible and accountable for things, that now we just sort of throw our hands up in the air and go, oh, well, that was tech.
And I don't know if you are even aware of one of the advancements with Blog Talk Radio. It's not been that long that this has been available. But in the control panel, in what we call the studio, we can actually call a guest from the studio. So to reach Tim, even though he's international, is a matter of going into the studio, clicking a button, and connecting to him. So in the future, when we do have guests that are overseas, that is possible.
And that's so cool. Think about what's continuously being revolutionized in technology. And at the moment, I have in front of me a switchboard that shows who's here. And at the moment, Tim is not one of those people. So you know what, Gina? I would love... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, you know, I would love, you know, to take time this hour. If Tim joins us, I know we're going to have a fabulous time with him. But I would really love to talk about what's happening with technology in business, particularly where you and I focus so often, which is about this notion of how we go about relationship marketing nowadays and how it feeds into the other elements of what we view as our business systems, because you and I have so many...
You know what? Let's talk about that in this way. Let's talk about where we were. Let's say when I got started getting out of law school in 1990 and where we've come since then.
Yeah.
I just had this conversation with my father two nights ago, and it was a fascinating conversation. if I think back to when I started law school back in like 1987, 1988, I was really hot shit when I started law school, Linda.
Yeah.
My dad was someone who had been a programmer way back in the 60s. And so he had computers very early on. Our first PC was literally the first PC that came out. When I went to law school, I had one of the very first notebook computers, which was made by Epson.
It was
not just the laptop, which was the big compact one that came out. This was what at the time looked more like a portable typewriter than anything else. And I was the only one in my law school class that actually had a cell phone. My cell phone was a bag.
Oh, yeah.
It was probably close to 20 pounds.
Yep.
My notebook computer was another 25 pounds.
Yep.
And then I had all my law school books on top of that. I literally had to have a cart because I was carrying around about 80 pounds with me all day long as I went into law school in the late 80s.
Yeah, you know, for those who are walking around with the of a Cray computer on their cell phone, I was doing consulting back in those days, hauling a compact computer. The screen was the size of what we call a large, you know, baby tablet nowadays. And it weighed 35 pounds. And how do I know that? Because I was hauling it through airports on wheels because it was too heavy to lift. And holy cow, what we have sitting in our back pocket now.
I know. I used to have one of those and got upgraded when I went away to law school. It was my graduation from college present from my dad. And oh my goodness, I remember those days. And even what became the notebook was not much smaller. It was a little less, maybe 10 pounds,
yeah.
And the screen was way bigger. But it was so different than what we have today. And back then, we didn't have Windows. No, we had MS-DOS.
That's right.
And I was a programmer. My dad was a programmer, so I learned to program. And I could write what were called batch files in MS-DOS. I was probably the only kid on campus in law school that actually had menus driving their computer. Everybody else had to go into DOS. No, Gina built her own menus, and it was cool. And because of that, I was actually able to get a job in the library helping everybody else use their computers. I didn't actually go seek the job myself. They saw me in the library with the only menu-driven system, and they were like, wow, can you help everybody else too? So I was able to make money as a student just because of that.
Yep.
And if I think about where technology was when I got out of law school and started my practice, oh my goodness, I was the only lawyer in my firm that actually had a computer, and that was only because I bought it myself.
Right.
When I first started my practice, I was trying to get all of the other lawyers in the office. We had about 110 of us. I was trying to get them to understand that if we could go and get some software that was not going to be cheap, it was going to be a couple $1,000s. It was what today we call ACT, and is only, what, 50, 60 bucks or a couple hundred at the most. But
yeah.
Back then it was a couple $1,000s. If we could get that software and put all of our client files into the software, we could really become way more efficient, and it would then allow us to actually be able to do research online. Now, this is way before the internet. This is 1991, 92. We didn't have the World Wide Web and the internet, and Google just didn't exist. But what we did have was paid services that were sometimes very pricey, $2,000 to $10,000 a month. But we could tap into those services and at least access on a subscription basis case law and other legal things that could really cut the amount of time it would take us to do things by 50% or more. And yet, because of the way that lawyers bill, we could still bill as if we had done the research with books in the library, making us literally twice the money. It would have been really huge. Well, it took me almost 4 years to convince the partners in the office that this was something that was going to be really good for them. And what finally got them to say yes to it was when I really showed them how it could improve the relationships that we had with our clients. I took 4 or 5 not so big accounts, sort of small accounts to the law firm, and I put those 4 or 5 accounts into the computer. And for a period of 12 months, I did everything with those accounts through the computer. And at the end of the 12 months, I went to the partners with the report and showed them that the billing from those accounts had gone up almost 12 times. And it was 100% because of the computer. And because we were doing such a much better job for our clients, we were then able to use those 4 or 5 accounts to get another dozen accounts that we never would have gotten before. And it was really an example of how technology can help build relationships. And we've just gone way past that today.
We've gone so past it. You know, I was watching Charlie Rose this past week, and he was interviewing Max Levchin, who was one of the what they called the PayPal Mafia, this group of, you know, 15, 20 very young tech guys who really revolutionizing business because they were creating business tools with new technology. PayPal was one of those outcomes. Yelp was another. And he mentioned a name that, you know, had me going back because when I was, as some folks know, I was an internal consultant at one of the Disney business units, and I did quite a bit of collaboration with what was back then called R&D for Disney. It was a hidden skunk works. And one of the people who was hired there was a technology journalist. And in a conversation I had with him, he said, people don't understand what's coming. There's this thing that's just been invented in the last couple of months called Netscape.
And, oh, my goodness.
Yes. And so listening to it, you know, it's a fascinating to literally have enough years pass that we can look back and talk about in really concrete terms what's changed. Because Netscape was this first creation of how people could use this thing called the internet to communicate with each other, sending messages that nowadays we don't even think twice about it. We call it email, and then after email it became, you know, chatting and messaging and so on. But back in that era, scientists had a system for communicating with each other, and Netscape was this first idea that you could broaden it for the general public. And I left Disney to go out into the business world where people in marketing who understood this notion of figure out all the ways you can be in relationship with your prospective client and customer or with colleagues or with resources, we're trying to convince people, ironically, in the legal profession and the accounting profession, that they should have an email address. And I watched for easily 5, 6, 7 years where every one of those attorneys said, I don't even type, and you want me to have people communicating with me through a medium that requires me to electronically be available and type? So
we dictated, right? We had big dictaphones.
Exactly.
Lawyers lived on the dictaphone, not typing. Come on. I remember when I first got Netscape and one of my partners wanted to know what would be possible through it. And he said, well, for example, can I read a book? So I'm like, oh, I'm sure you can read a book through it. Let me see what I can find. I spent 3 hours trying to find a book that he could read. There was only one title available at the time, Linda, and
how
it was The Wizard of Oz. It was the only book you could read in a browser window.
I love it.
And we are talking about 1995, not the Middle Ages.
Exactly.
1995, not even 20 years ago.
Yeah. So it was really fascinating, this interview where Max was reflecting that he had been, at the time, an 18-year-old who took a temp job in a garage, you know, sleeping on a mattress in the office and so on. And, you know, watching him talk about the progression from idea to implementation to trying things in the market to, as a team, having things work, having things fail, trying the next thing, and looking at that face and realizing here's someone with 20 years of experience in this technology world, and when Charlie asked him how old he was, he's 38.
And oh, my goodness.
Right. So the fascination for me is when we keep looking at, as entrepreneurs, where is our own innovation coming from? Part of it's coming from what's available to us now in the external world, like technology. Part of it's coming from new business models that are enabled because of technology. Part of it's coming because technology's broken down so many barriers. If we have an idea, we can simply go pursue it in ways that are economical now, that years ago you would have had to put a business plan together and go to the bank and say, I need $10,000 to try something.
Even 10 years ago, that would have been necessary in most cases.
Yeah.
And yet today we can do it for less than $1,000.
Right, right. You and I, in the past weeks, you know, have had how many conversations with people about putting shopping carts up? And an hour later, they've got an electronic shopping cart and they've populated it with product for their ideal customer to find
them. I'll tell you what, even when I got started in 1996, 1997, the internet was in its infancy. What was it, a year, year and a half old back then? I wanted a membership site. My very first business was a day trading chat room. And I'll tell you what, we did not have membership site platforms the way that we have them today. When I first opened my room, the only thing we could use, we didn't even have Skype, was this piece of software that I don't even know what we called it back then, but it was kind of like an instant messaging platform. And you could get up to 500 people typing back and forth to one another. You really couldn't do voice. The speed of the bandwidth wasn't good enough to do voice. And so the first 5 months, that's what we did. We had 500 people typing back and forth to one another. And finally, I was able to get a bridge line. And that bridge line cost me almost $1,000 a month. It's what today we would call free conference calling. It's free.
Yeah.
It's that big of a difference. And if I wanted my calls recorded so that I could then give them to the members, because, of course, if they're, you know, paying for this membership, they're going to want the recordings, right, especially the teaching portion of the day. To provide them with the recordings would literally cost me $500 a day to have a programmer take the recording, get it up online, get it onto a format that someone could download, would cost me $500 every day. What today I can literally pay girls in the Philippines $2 an hour, 3 minutes. They take the recording, they add it to a podcast, it shows up on my members. That's it. But that cost me a couple pennies.
Yeah, yeah. And it speaks to a couple of different things. One is, not that long ago, in the same time period you and I are talking about, if someone wanted to start a business, it would be a bricks and mortar business or a service business. You know, sort of in betwixt and between might be a teaching business, but those teaching businesses took place with people gathering in physical space at the same time. So,
like a Sylvan Learning Center.
Exactly, exactly. And so what has happened is it's not even year by year anymore. It's month by month. And I'll take the Khan Academy, which some of the people listening now are probably...
Oh, my goodness.
The Khan Academy is the result of a guy who was on Wall Street, very intellectual, asked by his family to help his nieces understand their math homework, very young girls. And he said, you know, let me do a little mini video that shows them that concept and they'll hear my voice and then they can listen to it over and over and over again. And what happened is he found he loved doing it. They learned and understood it. They wanted to share it with others. So he put together a little site where day after day he would do these little videos in a couple of subjects that his nieces had in school. Well, what, of course, nowadays we say of course, but back then it wasn't obvious. It was word of mouth. It was spread. And the internet enabled more and more people to watch it. I'm jumping ahead years, got a foundation grant to figure out how to make it available worldwide. And that's how the Khan Academy moved from something done very privately to something done very publicly. And so the first next stop in the evolution of an idea is how do you take it to a wider market? And the how-to can be willingness to, mindset, or it can be, nowadays, technology enabling it. And the domino effect isn't just where it was 2 years ago, which is because technology is now in third world nations, we can get education for free to those folks through the internet. It has now become, it's revolutionizing education in first world countries as people realize that you can pre-record the teaching and have the in-class time with a teacher, whether physically in a class or using group meetings through the internet, where the teacher is now truly a tutor like they were 300 years ago, helping answer the questions about how to apply the learning rather than just parroting the learning over and over again.
Amazing, isn't it?
It's amazing. And that one example of innovation, I invite everyone listening to think about what are the innovations possible now in engagement, in transferring information, in creating community, in creating commerce. Gina, you have
It has totally changed the way everything works. There isn't an aspect of life that hasn't been affected by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead with your question.
No, you and I have been on calls this past week with members of the Breakthrough Academy and members of Directions U, Directions University, helping them refine their thinking about their business. And I know you get a similar question to the one I get. I'll get people who say, but I don't want an internet business. And my answer is,
right,
not about having an internet business. It's what role the internet plays in enabling your business.
And, you know, the one thing that I have a really hard time getting people to see is that there's always these two extremes that I get approached with. I either get someone who wants an internet business, who only wants to be online, or I get someone who doesn't want an internet business, who wants just an offline business, and that's it. And what both groups really need to recognize is that if you're doing one or the other, you are missing at least 50% of your market. No business today should be present either exclusively online or exclusively offline. There are pros and cons to both. And it's no different than, let's say, back in the early 1900s, when things like radio and movies and by the mid-1900s, television became available. Before all of them, we had newspapers. That was it. The only channel for getting a message out was a newspaper. We moved from newspaper into radio, and now we had a new medium. And within the two mediums, print through newspaper, radio through sound, we had many different channels. There was the Chicago Tribune, the New York Times, the LA newspaper, all different channels. There were radio stations, some in Chicago, some in New York, some in Los Angeles, all different channels. The internet is simply another media. It is no different than radio, television, newspaper. They're all different media outlets. And within each one are many different channels. In the internet, channels come in the form of websites. Some of those websites have multimedia. They have text, they have images, they have audios, they have videos. Some of those channels only have one type of media or creative format. And it might be an all-video site like YouTube, for example. It might be an all-print site like many blogs are today. In our world today, we have technology that allows us to give every person what they want in the format they want it. Every channel, whether online or off, should have all of the different media options available: text, image, audio, video. Some people want to read. Some people love to listen. Others prefer to watch a video. And still others really learn best from a pretty picture. What all businesses should seek to do is to provide what they offer through all of those formats, making it available both online and off. If you're a more brick-and-mortar business, you've got a storefront location, you're not serving your customers well if all you're doing is selling them products. They want information, and they want products. Even if the information is how to use the product, or more important, why they need to use the product. If you use the internet to get them the information and use the brick-and-mortar business to get them the physical products, now you can really serve customers to the best of your ability and make your stuff available in all of the formats that are possible, not just one. Does that make sense, Linda?
It makes such complete sense. And, you know, when I think about what becomes enabled for businesses, be they entrepreneurial or businesses that don't think of themselves as entrepreneurial, the same element is being triggered by technology, which is there's the opportunity for so many more channels of profitability for a business.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking, well, the only people whose profitability is affected by the internet are people who are information marketers, info marketers, who have built a business around products that are all electronically created, electronically delivered, sold in different formats. The fact is, the availability of technology is changing every kind of business's profitability. So
it really is. And, you know, a couple months ago, we had a guest on two different episodes. His name was Barry Nicholson. And Barry introduced us to a book called Great Leads, written by Michael Masterson, who we're hoping to have on the show in the near future. And that book, Great Leads, talks extensively about the five levels of awareness. No matter what it is your company offers, whether it's a physical product, a service, information, no matter what it is, your customers and prospects are going to be at one of the five levels of awareness. More often than not, prospects are likely to be at the lower levels of awareness. 90% are going to be at one of the three lowest levels. And when they're at those three lowest levels, the easiest way to get them to want what it is you've got to offer, again, even if that's a service or a physical product, is to really get them the information first, so that through the information, you can elevate their level of awareness, at which point they do want to buy what it is you've got to offer. And so even if you sell physical products or done-for-you services of some sort, you really should be expanding your revenue stream to incorporate information, because in doing that, not only will you make more money because of the new revenue streams, but you're actually going to get to sell a lot more of what you also sell, because you will have elevated your prospect's level of awareness. And it really can be as simple as that sounds.
It really can. And, you know, as folks are listening to this conversation, I know that part of what's available now is this notion of how does technology play into creating connection with prospects? How does it get used, or is it usable in order to create and deepen connection and relationship with a prospect, with an early purchaser of your product or your service or a program? How does it deepen participation if what you're doing is your business includes programs, live, recorded? How is it that you're able to use technology to, in fact, engage and build relationship that moves people through levels of awareness so that they can make the decision for themselves with their business strategy and what they're trying to accomplish in their business, and how it gives them...
Well, they might be consumers and not businesses.
Exactly. And how does it give them access to what you're providing? How does it give you access to joint venture with others who it might have been, you know, even 10 years ago, that if you wanted to create a relationship with someone because of the business possibilities of expanding each of your businesses through that strategic alliance and that relationship and that sharing of knowledge and know-how to each other's customers and clients and so on, that required getting on a plane, paying for hotels, paying for transportation, showing up at conferences, and all of that is now enabled nearly cost-free through the internet. And, line item by line item, if I were to go through the profit and loss statement or the accounts, the expense accounts of clients only a decade ago and what it takes now to move from being a struggling business to a stabilized business to a scalable business, technology has revolutionized all of that at so little cost nowadays.
Well, yeah, now we can do meetings with people who might be on the other side of the world through vehicles like Google Plus Hangouts, and we can do that completely free. I mean, holy cow. It is just like you're sitting in the room with them, you're seeing one another, you're hearing one another, you're even seeing the surroundings of where they're at, and at the same time, you can actually be looking over one another's shoulders, seeing one another's computer screen. We couldn't do that for free even 10 years ago. Even
right.
5 years ago, we couldn't do that. And yet today, that's how business is done. But before we can really even start to address how we can use technology to do what you're suggesting, Linda, it really requires that you get into the head of your prospect and customer, start to think like them, and start to explore both what it is they really want and what it is they're out there looking for right this minute. Perfect example. My nephew is 7 years old. This kid had computers when he was an infant. His mom and dad got him his first computer, his first Mac, when he was 6 months old. He's had a tablet since he was a year and a half old. You can only imagine what that has done for this child. I have never, ever had the pleasure of meeting a child like this one before. I don't even know how to describe him in many instances. He called my husband Bill on Friday to wish him a happy birthday, and he called him Uncle Buddy. And Uncle Buddy says, "So Mason, what are you doing tonight?" And Mason says, well, I'm trying to decide if I should really buy an Xbox. You know, I can't decide. And Uncle Buddy says, so how are you trying to decide this? He says, well, I'm on YouTube and I'm watching videos of people playing Xbox games. And Bill's like, what the heck would you be doing watching videos of people playing games? And Mason very matter-of-factly said, well, how else would I know if I want one? That just blew me away. How else would you know if you want one? Come on, go to the store and see if you want one. But that's not how our kids are thinking today.
Right.
Mason never, ever buys anything, not a game, not a tool, not in anything, unless he has done thorough research of how other people are using it by watching videos on YouTube. And he's done this since he was 2 years old.
Right.
Just
so
how he thinks.
Right. So think about this mind, this way of operating, this way of researching, this way of connecting with information and providers of solutions as a consumer. He's demonstrating his expectations already of who his solution provider has to be to get him information now. And now let's go forward, I don't know, 10, 15 years. It may or may not be that many years for when he decides he wants to provide solutions in the form of a business of some sort. He's not even going to have to think twice. At the same time as he's thinking about his business model, his hands will be designing his own presence online.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing he does is, just an example, last year for Mason's birthday, Uncle Buddy bought him this really cool robot. It's a little 4-foot-tall robot. It's meant to be a toy, but it is very much a robot. This robot can do so many things. It can go get you a drink out of the refrigerator. It can go and do just about anything you can program it for. It came with this owner's manual that was probably a good 250 pages thick. Mason gets his box. He's shaking it. He's trying to figure it out. He opens it up. He sees the robot. He's all excited about it. Next thing you know, the robot's sitting on the floor. Mason's walked away, and he's going over to his computer. And Uncle Buddy's going, Mason, what's the matter? Don't you like the robot? And Bill turns around, and he sees sticking up out of the garbage can the 250-page owner's manual that it came with. And he's like, Mason, you really don't like that, do you? And he's like, oh, I love it. This is the best thing. And Bill's like, but how are you going to use it? You threw the owner's manual away. And he says, Uncle Buddy, what do you get an owner's manual for? That's antiquated. Now, 6 years old, right? That's antiquated. And Uncle Buddy's like, okay, so what are you going to do when you have to program it? He says, oh, well, that's why I'm on my computer. He's on YouTube looking at the videos of how other people have programmed their robot without even looking at the owner's manual.
Exactly, exactly.
That's how people act today.
Right.
They don't want us to provide products that come with 10-inch thick binders of how to use them. They want to be able to open a video and in 2 minutes or less figure out all the details of how to operate the most complicated piece of equipment you can imagine. That's just how people think. And if we as business owners don't recognize that, we're going to be constantly putting ourselves in a position where we're selling what we want to sell. They're out there looking for something 180 degrees the opposite of what it is we're trying to sell them, and they won't find us, and we won't find them and actually get them to open their wallets.
That's right. That's right. And it's across businesses. I love having Mason to be able to model what is going to be the expectation of consumers and buyers, whether they are, consumer market consumers or they are business market consumers of products, of services, of programs, of solutions. because time he is a buyer, whether he is a member of a, quote, business, a company, or he is a standalone buyer, he doesn't even think consciously about what he's doing. The level of assumptions and expectations he has for how he should be able to get at answers for himself, get connected with the provider of the answer, build a relationship with that service provider, that seller in the marketplace. It's a web of relationships. You know, there's a metaphor that comes to my mind, which is back in the day of the Roman Forum. Everyone left their house to go to the Roman Forum. It's where the bathhouses were. It was where the bankers were. It was where the gossip mills were. It was where your neighbors were. It was where the politicians were standing on the steps making their speeches. There was a gathering place that everyone in that civilization, in that society, knew they were going to go and be every day and get connected, get information, and so on. What we have now is the forum made available through technology, and not merely the one in our local area, our town, but the world as a whole.
It's a really good way to look at it.
And so Mason is already becoming wired to be able to walk out into his Roman Forum, which is now the Worldwide Forum.
Absolutely. And at 7 years old, and he's known this for probably the last 3 years, he knows that if he's looking for something that he's going to read, he's going to go to Google to do it. If he's looking for pictures of something, he's going to go to Bing to do it. And if he wants something that's a video, he's going to do it searching on YouTube.
Right.
Most business owners don't recognize that that's how people are using the internet. If business owners know anything, they think that their stuff needs to be showing up high up on the search results in Google. They don't realize that that's not how their prospects are out there searching for them at all. But that really is very much how people are using the vehicles we have available for search. If they want a video, they do the searching on YouTube, not on Google, not on Yahoo, not on Bing. If they want a picture, they do their searching on Bing. If they want text or multimedia format, then they usually go to Google. A handful of people will go to the other places only if they don't know any better. So it really is going to depend upon how advanced your audience is in using technology that determines what they're going to go and search for. And the simple fact of the matter is, whether we're an online business, an offline business, or some hybrid combination of the two, if we aren't going to have our stuff available in all of the different outlets, then it's no different than having an only online business or an only offline business. We're still missing the vast majority of our audience.
Exactly, because part of the challenge of being in business, and I challenge everyone who's thinking about their business as they're, you know, listening to this conversation, is what are the elements of connection between yourself and your prospects that you do need to master and or integrate into how your business is operating? What are the elements of technology and relationship that you need to incorporate into your business to strengthen the loyalty in the relationship between yourself and your clients? What is it that helps you become a strategist for your business, both individually or in conjunction with strategic partners? And how is technology helping make that faster and easier and more scalable? And then when we talk about systems and team, we're back again to how it has changed the cost of business to be able to work virtually, Gina, as you referred to a while ago, and have perfectly capable and competent work done by a team members on the other side of the globe at a fraction of the cost of having to have a virtual space that employees used to have to come to work in, where you were paying rent and insurance and utilities and everything else. All of that's erased from the cost of doing business. And setting up systems, the cost of systems we were talking about, cost of computing, the cost of accounting, the cost of operations has come down for every kind of business, which means, in a sense, the world's your oyster now. If you can conceive of something you want to bring to the world, it's become so much easier to go from concept to implementation at a much more cost-effective level.
No question about it. No question about it. You're attending an event in September that's being hosted by one of our former guests, Simon Mainwaring from WeFirstBranding.com.
Exactly.
And I got advance notice yesterday. It's not even announced on the website yet of a speaker that they just added to the lineup. I cannot wait to hear what this particular speaker is going to say. At Intel, one of the premier in technology companies, there is a guy who heads up an entire division that is the head of the futurist division of Intel. And all this entire division does is study what advancements technology is likely to see in the next 5 to 10 years, so that Intel can always be on the cutting edge, leading the way in technological advancements, instead of having to respond to other companies creating technological advancements. And the whole presentation that he's supposed to be giving is how, as marketers, we can take advantage of understanding what the future of technology is likely to bring. That is going to be one heck of an interesting presentation, I think.
It's brilliant.
If we just think about what we've shared already on this show about the history of technology and think 5 to 10 years in the future, I don't know that any of us can even envision where we're likely to be 5 to 10 years from now.
Right. All I can assume is that whatever it is that's being created will keep enabling connection, enabling communication, enabling relationship, and lowering the cost of all of it. It may be increasing the percentage of your time, your resources, your mind that has to go to the use of these, beyond just thinking of how do I use it for marketing to how do I integrate it throughout my business. But what it's enabling in business is what's astounding. I'm going to be in one of those seats at the conference in September. And beyond that, you know, for people who are listening and saying, well, not everybody can show up at the conference, but you can get on to the TED Talks week in and week out, where there's remarkable people sharing ideas about everything from science to technology to mindset to business and so on. There's so many avenues nowadays. It is not just when will the circular be thrown at your front door or when will a journalist decide to put an article about it in a newspaper. The availability of information to transform our businesses is so easily at hand. And Gina, you are amazing at how you scan for what's next to be able to turn it around and create it as a context for helping people see that.
Again, it goes back to technology, right?
Yep.
There is no way that I can stay up to date on all of that if I have to constantly go out searching for it. It's more than a full-time job. It's a full-time job for 50 people. However, technology is what really allows me to always stay up to date and be on the cutting edge. It's really simple. Today is free. It's called Google Alerts. If you go to google.com/alerts, you will find that in your Google account, you have a wonderful little system called Google Alerts. You can tell Google what topics you want to stay up to date on. You do that by defining the keywords that you want it to bring to you. And it's quite advanced. You can really use a combination of things to get pretty specific. And that's exactly how I do stay up to date on this stuff. Through Google Alerts, I can choose whether I want to know about something the minute it's released, whether I want it to send me updates once a day, twice a day, or hourly, whether I want it to be sent in a text message to my cell phone, in an email to my inbox, or whether I want it in an RSS feed where I can go in and look at it when I want it. But with Google Alerts, we can all stay up to date on anything we can imagine, because I promise you there isn't a topic that there isn't information available on. Each and every topic you can think of, there's information out there, and likely more information coming. Just go create a Google Alert, and you'll find it the minute it hits.
Right, and there's something very specific that happens when you start to define what it is you want to know and put it in a Google Alert. You start to become really refined in your thinking about what you want as information sent to you. And the partnership with that is one of the exercises that I give to the folks that I work with, which is, who are the sources, the very few handful of sources that you're going to use to curate for you information, to get it from the mass of information down to what can trigger your imagination. So Google Alerts, you're using it as a curation system by telling it what information you want. And I get on the treadmill at the gym with Fortune Magazine, Inc. Magazine, Entrepreneur Magazine, letting it bring me the insights of what others in business are trying in their business to stimulate my thinking, and I have the folks I work with do the same. So in the industry you're in the business you're in, how can you, in fact, use resources to help take the mass of information that's now available and help refine it down to help shape your thinking in your business?
And as we wrap up today, if you take nothing else away from the show, take this one piece, and that is, you really need to get into the mind of your prospect and your customer and start seeing the world through their eyes. Start thinking about the world through their eyes, and let that really help shape what it is you decide to do to reach them. If that's all you do, it will really help you to be really innovative and be the leader in your field. So that's all we have time for today, Linda. Maybe we can get Tim on an upcoming show.
We're definitely going to, and I look forward to future discussions that you and I have, and bring everybody else in for helping them shift their insights so that they can create breakthrough directions in their lives and their businesses.
I look forward to being back next week with you for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.